This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
New autobiography that's about to drop. Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed in the First Family of NASCAR Racing. Kyle Petty, welcome aboard. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Kyle, I'm tickled to death to have you on, man. I really am. We've engaged each other a few times when I was working in Winston-Salem, and I've got to tell you, I don't want to talk about the book just yet because I've had an opportunity to read the book. I got questions, but I want to get your take on what happened at Pocono. I cannot believe they actually DQ'd a winner. What was your reaction?
You know what? I can't believe it. Because they've never, it's been forever. You know, I heard you talking about 1960, 1955. They did first and second in 1955, but 1960 with a manual for too big a gas tank, and which is just blows my mind. But I think, you know, they've been pretty adamant about how they were going to change the sport, clean the sport up, fix it so that when people didn't have to wait until Tuesday afternoon to find out who won the race, they watched on Sunday. And that's the big thing. You know, if you do something on Sunday, we're going to fix it right there. We're going to change it right there. And, you know, there was no amount of fine or points or whatever that could have fixed it on a Tuesday afternoon. So they chose to fix it that way. And I applaud them. I applaud NASCAR because that sends a huge message across that garage area. Mess with us, you're going to get DQ'd. It's our game. It's our ball. It's our ball field. You're going to play by our rules. And I applaud NASCAR. Even though I've never seen it before, not in my lifetime, I applaud them.
You know, Kyle, we were talking yesterday. I said, well, I'll give them credit. At least they won the race. I mean, if you're going to cheat, you better win. We were talking about Tennessee's football team, how they were cheating, but they weren't winning. I'm like, if you're going to cheat, you better win. At least they won. But my next question before we close this matter, Kyle, how does Joe Gibbs, specifically Joe Gibbs, how does he handle this going forward?
Well, see, I've seen that, and that's a great question, because I'm going to say this in defense of Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, and any driver almost that ever drives a car like this is, you know, your job is to drive the car. You don't build the car. You don't work on the car. You don't do things. You're responsible for running it into the wall or making it win a race. That's your job, you know. And people will look at Denny and Kyle and say, cheaters. They're not cheaters. They just drove the car. They're part of an organization that bent the rules and got caught, and that's the way it is. But I think this falls back on the organization. And I think that's the bigger statement, that after 60-some-odd years in this sport, that the Gibbs organization is the first organization to be DQ'd from a win and have one taken away. And it's not about the drivers. It's more about the organization. And that speaks to the times we're in. So I think for them, you know, at a time when they're looking for sponsors for Kyle Busch to try to keep him in their stable and try to find somebody to come in and pay money, it doesn't look – the optics aren't that well when it says, oh, so you want me to give you $10 million, but you're going to bend the rules and my name's going to be on the side of the car, and that may not look exactly the way I want it to look. So it's a tough situation for that organization to be in.
And Kyle, just one more actual competition question before we move on to your fantastic book. What's your take on the next gen car this year? I'm a fan. I love it.
Listen, I am a huge fan. It is a huge departure of anything that NASCAR has ever done car wise. We went from basically 1965 technology to 2050 technology. When you look at these, you know, the cameras in the cars and the stuff for mirrors and that type of stuff, the sequential shift, the single lug nut, the rack and pinion, the independent rear suspension, they totally changed the car. And I think the product on the racetrack has benefited from it. If we go all the way back to Daytona, we go all the way back to those first two or three races at Atlanta and California and Vegas, you know, you could see that, hey, this is going to be good. This is going to be exciting. And how can you not look at the car and say the car is directly contributing to 14 different winners, to guys like Ross Chastain, who's running up front week in and week out, to guys like even Michael McDowell in a car that struggled to run in the top 15 or 20 a year ago is now consistently a top 10 or 12 car, and is having a phenomenal year with a small team. So you look at the big Hendrick organizations and the Gibbs and the Penske's, and these smaller teams are able to compete, and I think that is a direct has a direct correlation to what the car is. So I am a huge fan of the car.
I agree.
Ty Gibbs got in that thing and finished in the top 15 in it. So, you know, I think it favors these young drivers, but I'm a huge fan of it.
It definitely identifies the best driver, man. I'm really enjoying it. We're joined by Kyle Petty. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Petty. He's also the author of Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed in the First Family in NASCAR Racing. Kyle, did you come up with that title? That's quite a bit of word salad there.
Yeah, you know, but it's all-encompassing, and I think you have to read the book to understand the title. You know, I think most everybody will look at the title, and because I drove a race car, will say, oh, I get that. But that's not really what the title's implied. It is, if you read the book and you look at, you know, how I started doing this and where my life's been and the people in my life, and sorry, that's my son, and the people in my life and the people that have passed away, the people I've lost, my uncle, my mom, you know, my son, and you look at the sport and how the sport continues to change, then I think that's the deal. You know, you have to be willing to change. You have to be willing to swerve or just crawl up in a ball and not go on any farther. And I think it the title speaks to how my life's been, because there's the moments when I could have just stopped, laid down in the floor and said, that's the end of the conversation. And I think there's been that way in our sport too. So those two stories are intertwined in that.
Well, and then especially for you, Kyle, I mean, having that last name and just everything that comes with it. I mean, if you don't adapt, you'll get swallowed whole. I mean, you have no choice, adapt or die. You really have no choice. And I actually had this conversation with Junior a few years ago. We were having sushi, of all things, believe it or not. And I asked him, I said, what was it like for you to grow up with your last name, with the pressure and the expectations that come with that? And Kyle, he actually brought your name up and said that you had discussed it with him when he was younger. Can you kind of work us through what that might have been like?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, and I will say, I look at him in awe a lot of times, because it's tougher for him. He had the name. And what I mean was, my dad was Richard Petty, but I had a different first name. I was Kyle Petty. You know, he was Dale Earnhardt straight through. They just put a tacked a junior on the end of it. And I think the fans' expectations was for him were, he'll just pick up where his dad left off and just continue on. And you know, the conversation that we had, and that we continue to have to this day about different things now that we have kids and young kids together again, it's funny. You just talk about allowing yourself to be you, allowing yourself to be Dale Jr., allowing you to enjoy the things you enjoy, and not trying to replicate, not trying to duplicate, to try to be your dad. You want to imitate him in every way you can, but you're not a clone. You're not a clone. You're not a – and I told him it was like this. You're not a projection screen. You're not the projection screen that all the fans project their hopes and dreams and ambitions onto you. You have your own hopes, dreams, and ambitions. And I think he did a phenomenal job at a time when the sport was growing and flourishing, and there were a lot more eyes on it, of just being Dale Jr. and carrying himself well. And his contributions to the sport will continue to live on through his concussion protocol and some of that stuff. But it can be a daunting task and a dark, dark shadow to grow up under if you let yourself believe that. If you never let yourself believe that, if you look at it as an opportunity like Dale and I both did, I think, and just smile and go on no matter what anybody says, then you come out the other side better for it.
But that's the wisdom of a 62-year-old Kyle Petty. What would a 22-year-old Kyle Petty say if he was asked that question right now? What's it like to be the son of the great Richard Petty?
Okay, so at 22, and I will tell you this, at 9, let's go back to 9. At 9 years old, I thought everybody in the world, I thought everybody's father had a race car. I didn't know any different. I just thought that, I thought that's what everybody's father did for a living. That's how smart I was. And I took a kid to Greenville Pickens, to the to the racetrack when we were in the second or third grade, and he was just in awe. And I'm like, what's the deal, man? And he's like, this is the first time I've ever been around race cars. I'm like, you don't have a race car? And he's like, no, my dad works at a bank, which is just fascinating to me that people work 9 to 5 and worked regular jobs. But, I think for me, even early on, man, I got it in high school. You know, you got fans who would scream at you, and, man, I'm just playing football. I'm playing basketball. I'm playing baseball. I don't care what my dad does on Sunday. That's got nothing to do with me playing a sport. But you realized you were always going to be in that place. But I was very, very blessed. And I tell people, I grew up, my mom was our anchor, and she was the one that kept us as close to normal. But I think of my childhood being normal, but from the outside looking in, it's not normal. To grow up going to racetracks and doing the things we did and seeing the things we saw. So that's a little bit different. But you know what? I use the same old answer. The only father I ever had was Richard Petty. And, you know, whether he worked at a bank or was a farmer or drove a race car, that's how I grew up, and that's who I wanted to be. He allowed me space to be who I wanted to be. And I think that's all any parent can do.
Yeah, we don't pick our family. And, you know, I mean, Kyle, you're such a well-spoken guy. You're such a smart guy. You're a personable guy. I can give you all kinds of compliments, man, and I would mean every darn one of them. But still, you kind of answered my next question. I'm almost hesitant to talk about your dad because he is such a figure and he is such a notable name. And you're your own man, and you've evolved into this personality that is unique to you. But have there been periods of bitterness in your life where maybe you said, you know what, you wish your name was Smith or Jones and that you were a banker or that, you know, you worked at a fast food place, anything but who you were?
No. And I can answer that instantly and emphatically. You know, it's funny, and I tell people, still tell, and I'm telling it to you, if I was able to have my grandfather Petty here and Adam here, and you lined all four of us up and brought us into a room and asked all four of us five questions, the same five questions, okay? Then we're gonna leave that room at different, and I'm gonna come through, Adam's gonna come through, my dad's gonna come through, one at a time. You're gonna get up and you're gonna look at those answers and you're gonna say, these guys aren't even related. These guys don't even know each other. You know what I mean? That's how different we all were. And so I don't think there was never that moment, because I was allowed to just be Kyle. Look, you go back and look at my career driving a race car. The only time that I ever had the name Petty on the roof of a car was when I drove for the Wood Brothers. And that's because they wanted to put Petty on a Wood Brothers car. Any other time I drove a car, it just said Kyle, because that's who I was. And that's how I looked at myself. I didn't look at myself as my last name or as any of that. So I think that's the deal. So there was never a time that I ever wanted to be anybody else.
I love it, man. We're joined by Kyle Petty. We're talking about his autobiography. Kyle, just a few more moments, please. And you talk about your family, and you talk about your grandpa, you talk about your dad, and you also mentioned Adam. We lost Adam 22 years ago. Was there anything therapeutic about writing this book that might continue to help you come to terms with everything that happened to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. There was a lot. There's a lot that, and there's still a lot that I need to let go, that's there somewhere, that I could be, I was as honest as I could be, with myself and with you when you read this thing, but, there's still places. You know, it's funny, you know, Adam's accident happened in 2000, and I tell people all the time, you know, my heart goes out to any parent who has lost a child. And I don't care if you're 90 and you lose a 70-year-old son. You just don't think about your children going before you go. And it throws your world upside down. And I can look back now. I didn't at the time. I didn't see it at the time. I can look back now and say, you know, that I went through years and serious years of just being depressed, and a serious depression and just a black hole that I didn't know I was in, that I didn't know I was in until I was able to see light and come out of it. And then you look back and it's like, man, that was a bad place. And so looking back, you know, you see that, and that was therapeutic to walk back down that hallway and to walk back and see those in your mind, to see those photos hanging on the wall of how things were and who you were. And it's not always good. not always pretty. And you know, I had been in that place before when my Uncle Randy was killed at Talladega when I was only 13 or 14 years old on pit road. So there's different things that were really therapeutic about it. You know, the way I left Felix and left Sabco, I should have handled that a little bit better, and I've always regretted that. So this gives me an opportunity to kind of apologize and make amends for that. So there's just different things in there that were really, during the pandemic, when you're at home and you're by yourself, it was a good time to do it.
I remember reading an article recently about your daughter, how she was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, I might have it slightly missed up, but I think, was it your daughter who helped set, who stood up and kind of got you back on your right path with regards to reconciling your son's death?
Yeah. She's so much, you know, even when she was 13 years old, even when Montgomery Lee was 13, she was so much more mature and so much more intuitive to what the world was and where we were headed. And I think that she has dealt with it. Austin dealt with it. He dealt with it in his own way. And, you know, everybody grieves in a different way. My grandmother, when my uncle was killed, my grandmother used to always say, the answers are in the Bible. All you got to do is open the book. You don't even have to be looking for something. It's on one of those pages when you just flop it open. And she was right. But everybody grieves different. Everybody takes a different course. And sometimes people talk, but you don't hear them talking. And they're trying. They're trying so hard to break through, but you don't hear it. And then one thing they say cracks that door. And then you let a little more in, a little more in. So it just takes time. And, you know, it's been 22 years. Adam would be 42 years old right now. And that's fascinating to me because he was 19 years old when his accident happened. And it's still, you know, it's still May 12th is still as painful as it's always been. July 10th, which is his birthday, is still as painful as it's always been. So it never, ever goes away. The sharp edges get knocked off of it. But it's still painful.
Then you had a recent addition to the family on May 12th. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, CJ, man, I got a you know, my son had a little granddaughter, and that's first granddaughter on for him. He's got two little boys and a little girl. My daughter has a little girl and Sullivan and two little boys. And I just said, listen, I've started over. I'm remarried. Made Morgan Costano. She was a University of South Carolina graduate. That's what I always like to say. And so we have three children. Overton, he's four. He's sitting in the back seat here. I'm on my way to see Felix Sabatis right now. Ooh. As a matter of fact. Which I drove for so many years. And I have a 2-year-old named Cotton. And we just had I've got a 3-week-old son named Devant. So I've got three little boys, and they have been a blessing in my life and a great great part of healing my soul in a lot of ways. I can say that.
Oh, I love it. He's the author of Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed, and The First Family in NASCAR Racing. It's going to come out. That's coming out August 9th, right, Kyle?
August 9th, and you can pre-order it now from Barnes & Noble. Books A Million still has autograph copies, I think, if you pre-order from Books A Million and Amazon. And listen, man, I tell people, please pre-order it. I am trying. We have set a goal to try to sell 4,500 books, and that's what we try to do in pre-order. And we're going to do some special stuff with camp. Obviously, Victory Junction is a camp we built in memory of Adam. And 45 is just the number. That was Adam's number. That's a number we've always worked around with. My dad was my granddad was 42. And my dad was 43. I was 44 for a large part of my career, and then Adam came along at 45. So we're working on that. So if you want to read it, pre-order it. It'll be there on August 9th, August 10th. It drops on August 9th, so please, you'll help a lot of kids and help us too.
Well, I got a media copy, but I'll send you some money to put to Victory Junction. I'm just mad. I would like to have had a chapter about Stroker Ace. That's my favorite racing movie.
And listen, Stroker Ace, I couldn't write a chapter about Stroker Ace. That comes out. And let me tell you why. Real quick.
No, I love that movie. I love
it. We went down there to film that movie, and it was Earnhardt, myself, Ricky Rudd, and Tim Richmond. And we were there for 3 days to film just our short clip. And out of, I think, I want to say, out of about a 72-hour period, we slept about 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
So that's a whole book. That's not a, I can't even tell you the things. All I'm going to tell you is one time we woke up in a van at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was a house sitting in the middle of the road, and we were not hallucinating. That's all I'm going to say.
Wait a minute.
That's all I'm going to say about Stroker Ace.
You and Senior woke up in a van.
And Richmond, and Tim Richmond, and Ricky Rudd. But that's a whole other story.
Okay,
that's
Kyle.
For a different time.
Real quick, next time you're in Mooresville, and I'll send you the name of this place. It's a diner that's really good breakfast. They have the All-Star poster. You talk about Tim Richmond. I'll leave it at that. And I'm sitting there eating my eggs and grits.
I gotcha.
And I text DW. I sent him a picture. I go, what in the world? And he goes, oh, because DW is in front of him. And he goes, oh, it's just me and some of my friends, some of my buddies. I about choked.
Perfect, perfect.
Kyle, you are the man, brother. I really appreciate everything you're doing, pal. Let's catch up soon.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me, man. And please, pre-order the book, man. Swerve or Die. Help me get to 4,500. I appreciate it.
You got it,
see
pal.
See you guys.
That's Kyle Petty. Man. Follow him on Twitter, at Kyle Petty. Swerve or Die, Life at My Speed in the First Family of NASCAR Racing. He says get to pre-orders. He wants to get to 4,500. They're going to put that money towards the Victory Junction game. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million, all kinds of places. So good stuff, Kyle Petty. I got to take a break. I'm cracking up. More of the Scott Hamilton Show to come.